and gentlemen, friends, Romans, countrymen, welcome to Human Rights Radio on the Rents Radio Network. Dr. Duke normally would be starting the show, but he had to throw his phone out of the window because it was being very, very rude. There is a judge in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court who is known for throwing.
Dr. Slattery, I'm listening to you. So I'm back.
Out of the window. Are you there?
Yes. Keep talking. I'm listening to you. I'm interested in the story you're going to tell us here. Keep talking.
They will. Yes. Well, there is this one judge, and if your phone rings in his courtroom, he's a Supreme Court judge, and he will have his sergeant at arms confiscate your phone and throw it out the window. So you better have a good phone case. That's all I can say. Anyway,
I got a call from an elected official that I know that I put a call in, and he actually returned my call, and so he was very kind. But so I had to be courteous to him for a moment because I've been waiting for his call. It's on an important matter, and so excuse me for that exit. It just came at exactly the wrong time. Because a lot of these people, you can only leave a message for, they got to call you back. And when you have an important business call, you have an important political call, you have some sort of important person, you just have to at least make touch base with them. And you don't want to lose that particular contact.
Well, you have to do what you have to do. I was reading.
I know we've lost you a lot of times on the show too, because you got business as well. I understand that.
I was reading a Stormfront thread last night, and the thread was titled "The Great Dr. Slattery." Now I thought, "Oh, hey, that's me." So I'm reading the thread, and it was a bunch of people complaining that I'm walking my dog during this show, and that I take calls, and that my phone has echoes, and all sorts of other stuff. So anyway,
let me tell you something. The value. I'd like to respond to that a second. I just want to tell you something positive, that the value you give to me, just even my understanding, and what you bring to the conversation is so valuable. Those kind of things to me are incidental to the incredible intelligence you have, the knowledge you have, and the synergy that takes place when we talk together. So I don't agree with those assessments, and I just want to tell you how much I appreciate the fact that you're a very busy man. You have to provide a living, for your family while you do these things. You don't get paid for this. And I'm very, very thankful for every moment you're able to spend with us. And we treasure those times that you're able to spend with us and give to us. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you very much. And people would be surprised at all of the things that I have seen and done during these and other broadcasts. I was once driving right past like a car that was it was an inferno, and that type of thing can distract you. And if I was like super heroic, maybe I should have stopped the car and run into the inferno and pulled people out. I don't think anybody was still inside, and I'm probably not the best person at doing such a thing. Another time I was on a storm front, and I was walking in a creek because my dog, Mr. T, it was a phase he went through. He wanted to walk in the creek. So we're walking in the creek, and all of a sudden this giant, what is like 32-point buck comes running right between me and Mr. T. Right between, he's like 5 feet away from running right through the creek. Right. And I just had to pretend, I think I screamed something. But a lot of things happened. But right now I'm sitting in my underground bunker, and I should be fully. Yeah.
We missed that last word. You should be full of what?
Should be just fully protected. There shouldn't be anything strange happening. Everything should be just fine today.
Well, good. Let's try. Sometimes connections go down. But we have a lot to talk about today, and I think it's time we address the NATO conference that's been going on. I think it's in Estonia, if I'm right. And I'm trying to think.
Vilnius. Vilnius. Nice town, by the way. I've been
there. Not Estonia. Vilnius. Lithuania, then. Lithuania, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for correcting me. That's right. I have another guest that often appears on my Sunday night show who lives in Estonia. We get a lot of commentary for him, so I naturally think of Estonia when I think of the Baltics and people. But anyway, and I'm thinking what to call this conference. And you know how I've got, I think, very accurate name for Zelensky in Ukraine, the butcher of Ukraine, because he's literally leading the nation, which he's the president of, to complete destruction. Their educational system, their transportation system, their bridges, their dams. I think they blew up the dam. I think they even tried to create an incident and damage with the Zaporizhia nuclear plant, which could have destroyed all of Ukraine with the way the winds and radiation that could have happened by their intentional bombing of this. I don't think the Russians are trying to bomb their own plant in their own territory of what's part of Russia today, according to the annexation of it, after votes, by the way, massive votes by the people that approved this. And by the way, there were polls, again, by the way, I'm sorry, all the by the ways, but again, by the way, there was a poll done by left-wing, or in fact, modern, normal, mainstream media in Europe and America, when they looked at the plebiscites, the votes in both what's called the eastern areas, Lugansk and Donetsk region and all these regions of Ukraine. And overwhelmingly, the poll showed that the Ukrainians wanted to leave, the corrupt governor of Ukraine, run by these Jewish gangsters like Kolomoisky, who was a big Jewish gangster, stole $5 billion, according to Bloomberg, from the Ukrainian people in a big fraud. He's the guy who was behind Zelensky. This was a coup by a foreign country to overturn the legally elected government of Ukraine, which the people in the East overwhelmingly voted for. And he is, and NATO as well. And our government under the same Jewish control, like our State Department, Mr. Blinken's Jewish. Mr. Nuland's Jewish. And we can keep going on down in terms of European. Our diplomatic corps looks like something you expect in Israel. It's been that way just about since the time of Clinton, President Clinton. And he knows, and they know. In fact, he tried to get a peace deal, but the United States wouldn't hear of it. And he knows that his fame and his fortune and his elevation to like sainthood in the West is dependent upon him doing what the global Zionists do, the Zionist elite in America, the global Jewish power structure wants in terms of this war. And the sad thing is that here he is. I mean, you can't even imagine this man. Just think of it this way. It's very rare for even any American citizen to be invited to address a joint session of Congress. Extremely rare. Yet we've got this guy addressing a joint session of Congress who's, first of all, he was installed by gangster criminals. It's the most corrupt state in the world. He has been an enemy of democracy. He has worked to completely, criminally, and this is a crime, he has criminally made illegal his major opposition parties in the country. He has kidnapped people with the secret police. He's gone along with waging a war against his own people. He claimed are part of Ukraine, but they've been bombing their cities, their regions, their states, murdering men, women, and children wholesale. Because early in this war, the Russian involvement in this war was a reaction to the fact that 14 to 16,000 civilians and other Ukrainians died by the attack of the Ukrainian government out of Kyiv to eastern Ukraine. And he, when he was elected to power, the eastern parts, their votes didn't get counted, obviously, and they already voted to separate. And so when he won, he promised that he was going to make peace with Russia and that war wasn't worth it. Then he goes and does whatever the United States wants. And when I say United States, I have to put a pause there because it's not the United States, of course. It's not the people of the United States, the interest of the United States. it's not the facts that Americans have in the United States. It's really about a Jewish elite that dominates four areas really of American power that is dictating the policies of this country. One, of course, very purely and simply, is media. They vastly control media. Jews who run the major TV networks, who run the major newspapers, who run the major social media platforms, which censor people for the wrong opinions, run the Jewish World Encyclopedia called Wikipedia. It's Wikipedia is what it is. The people, that's one. The political funding in this country, and you can go to Federal Election Commission reports, you can go to organizations like Open Secrets, which shows the rich oligarchs, which have the massive control. They're the big contributors, the people that give $1 million or more, $10 million, $20 million, $100 million, like Sheldon Adelson, who gave $100 million to Trump, and to the Republicans, $500 million. But he supported those Republicans who were not like Trump. The Republicans he supported were the Republicans who were open border Republicans. And many of them were. In fact, until Trump came along, that shocked them, so they couldn't do it anymore. You had the Gang of Eight, including Cruz, including Rubio, which now pretend to be opposed to immigration, that we're going to make a sign an amnesty in America. So they control the political funding. They control the media, as we've talked about. They control the biggest banking, which has so much influence over our economy, and a banking house that is a criminal, international criminal bank, Goldman Sachs, was convicted of it, and was the biggest single political contributor as well. And of course, they control these political organizations and the actual people who've infiltrated and controlled offices like the White House and the chief of staff of the White House, for instance. Both of them under Biden have been Jews. They're the real presidents, with the demented president, of course, are in terms of real power. They control everything that goes on his desk, everything he reads, everything he signs, every appointment he makes. And I think that they have the biggest influence. And then you look at the cabinet positions, which is not diverse. So I said a lot there, but it's important to note this. And these people that are meeting under NATO, under the control of the United States, and the Jews that control the United States, they are butchers. They have promoted this war, which is endangering all of Europe. They've also hurt Europe. They're making it almost a kill blow in Europe in terms of destroying their industry, their business. They're creating a depression in Europe, recession, destruction of millions of jobs. And certainly they're affecting millions of lives negatively in Europe. And it's amazing to just step back and look at what this NATO organization is doing, and Zelensky there, and the criminal behavior. And this is a vast crime, human rights crime, this war, which was totally unnecessary and that Russia tried to avoid. I'll start off with that. Go for it, my friend.
All right. Well, so, and you were mentioning Vladimir Zelensky and his and the history, the recent history of Ukraine with the 2014 coup. So you did have this coup d'etat in 2014 that had been obviously engineered by Victoria Nuland. We know this from the audio evidence of the phone call where she and the ambassador to Ukraine were plotting before the coup took place, who is going to be ruling Ukraine afterwards, who's going to be in what position. They gave names, and those are
the Jewish name, by the way, who they wanted to have in.
Arseniy Yatsenyuk was mm-hmm. to be prime minister.
That's right. We
also know that she and John Kerry and Sassy Jen Psaki, who was the State Department spokeswoman at the time, we have photographic evidence that had been published in one of the British newspapers. I can't remember what, but it from like a month or 6 weeks before the coup. And the three of those State Department officials are meeting with Yatsenyuk and Poroshenko and Vitaly, the boxer, Klitschko, who became mayor of Kiev. So they became mayor of Kiev, prime minister and president. They were meeting together. They were talking together. And we also know that during these demonstrations in December and January and February, Victoria Nuland was photographed frequently in the demonstrations, handing out bagels or whatever they were. And, you know, you could say, oh, well, bagels, so what? I mean, you can't have a coup d'etat based on bagels. But she was obviously showing her support. So anyway, so that's non-controversial. By the way,
can I add one point about the demonstrations, just for a very important point that's often not mentioned? It wasn't a question of even demonstrations or a popular uprising in terms against the government, and that's why how this coup happened. They absolutely orchestrated, and there's huge evidence of this. There's no real questioning of this, even in mainstream media, that there were snipers installed on the building tops, which were specifically fired into, not only they fired into the crowd, and they fired into the defense. They were firing into the police.
They fired
into
both sides.
Right. They fired into both sides, trying to create a bloody, terrible incident, get people killed, right, to make out the regime was doing this when it wasn't the regime at all. It was probably was the Mossad. We can't prove what it is, but we know that they were doing both sides.
There was another captured phone call that was never denied. It couldn't be denied. And it was between Catherine Ashton, who was the EU commissioner for foreign relations, the equivalent of the EU foreign minister, and the foreign minister of Estonia, Pitt, not to be confused with Jeffrey Piat, who was the U.S. ambassador. And so in this phone call, the Estonian foreign minister is informing Catherine Ashton that there were snipers associated with the demonstrators who were shooting at both sides. And Catherine Ashton is saying, oh, I didn't know that. And so there's all sorts of evidence. At any rate, so had a very illegitimate coup d'etat, and the day after the coup d'etat, the Ukrainian parliament met, but of course it's just the elements that supported the coup d'etat. They passed extremely anti-Russian laws, laws where, you know, practically half the country has Russian as their native
main language.
Yeah, their native language, and yet Russian was decertified as a official language of Ukraine. It had been one of three official languages: Ukrainian, Russian, and Tatar, Crimean Tatar, and they removed Russian. And so you had three provinces, Crimea and Donetsk and Lugansk, who declared independence. And Crimea, for various reasons, it was annexed immediately by Russia. There were good reasons for that, but I'm not going to go into them. Russia did not annex the other two provinces. They for 8 years tried to get them reincorporated back into Ukraine with constitutional guarantees for their cultural rights. This wasn't an aggressive thing. Now, in 2019, you had an election, and the incumbent president, who had been installed by Victoria Nuland, Petro Poroshenko, was very unpopular. And in the and Zelensky, who was a creation of Kolomoisky, as you noted, he ran, as you noted, on a peace platform. He ran on a peace platform. Now, those three breakaway provinces didn't vote, but the other 23 provinces or whatever there are, voted overwhelmingly. They almost 75%. It was like 73% voting for Zelensky and his let's get along with Russia platform. They were completely hoodwinked. He came into office, and then he within a couple of years he becomes completely a tool of a Victoria Nuland, who came back on the scene in 2019. Victoria Nuland was out of office, but once Victoria Nuland and Blinken and Wendy Sherman, once they came back, once Biden brought his Jew crew back into the State Department, then they they did this war, and Zelensky, he is the butcher of Ukraine. He is completely a butcher. You've got 300,000, at least 300,000 by now, dead Ukrainian soldiers, and they're that he's sending them, using them as sacrificial pawns. There's no cause that he's fighting for. There's no way that they're going to militarily defeat Russia. That's retarded. Nobody.
And if it's 300,000 dead, then there's hundreds of thousands, maybe more probably, who are certainly injured, lost legs, arms, eyesight, brain injuries that will last them the rest of their life. Maybe even the right or the ability to have children. I mean, there's so many things that are so horrendous because, you know, when we always talk about deaths, and death is that final bell, right? But at the same time, there a lot of these people will live with pain and suffering and mental issues and physical issues the rest of their lives. This is a slaughter of the Ukrainian people. And I just wanted to throw that in for a second as you continue your narrative. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, there's the whole idea of this was to use Ukraine as a sacrificial lamb to get a sacrificial lamb that, you know, force maneuver Russia into attacking Ukraine. And of course, Russia had been for 8 years, they had been showing so much restraint because you got to figure you had 14,000 ethnic Russians being slaughtered by Ukrainian mostly artillery. They were just killing Russians on a daily basis. And Putin was under great pressure from his own population, because the Russians see Putin as being very timid and restrained. The Russian population, if Putin were ever to be overthrown, there would be somebody much more aggressive. Putin's not particularly aggressive.
That's right.
But Putin showed all this restraint. But at the end of the day, if you're faced with Ukraine joining NATO, with Ukraine getting nuclear weapons, putting nuclear weapons right on the border with Russia, nuclear weapons 11 minutes from Moscow or 7 minutes from Moscow or something like that, it was completely unacceptable. And, you know, no. And you got to remember, NATO is explicitly an anti-Russian military alliance. So this was and the world outside of NATO member countries and a couple others, the world agrees that this was unacceptable, and the world did not join the sanctions. But the whole plan was to have Russia invade Ukraine, and then Russia would be a bad guy, and you could have unprecedented economic sanctions that would cause a world of economic pain in Russia, and then the Putin government would fall. That was the whole plan. It didn't happen. It's never going to happen. But they have no exit ramp. So they're stuck with this. And the smart Jews like Henry Kissinger or Jeffrey Sachs or Noam Chomsky are saying, or even the head of the Council of Foreign Relations, you know the guy I'm talking about, Haas, Richard Haas.
Yeah, Richard Haas. The new one coming in as a Jew as well, Froman, I think his name is.
Yeah.
By the way, the CFR, and it's important to talk about CFR because I want to bring the CFR up in a minute, but we'll go into details on CFR in a second, and we'll talk about some of this.
The smart Jews know that the gig is up, the jig is up, they can't win, and it's time to just cut and run, get the hell out of there. But the ones who are actually in charge of the policy, the people in the Biden administration, if they were to try to cut their losses, they have absolutely zero chance of being reelected. It would be like the Afghanistan criticism on steroids. And so all they can do is try to keep this going, hopefully long enough to get past the election. It's not going to happen, but they have nothing else that they can do.
Yeah, that's true. Well, let's just go into this, and let's talk about Jewish, Ukrainian, relations a little bit historically so people understand what's really going on here. We know, first off, that the actual number of Jews of which they consider to be true Jews directly was, at least before this war started, about 40,000 in Ukraine. 40,000. And it's pretty amazing. Even if we wanted to say that have part Jewish lineage, it's maybe double that or so. So the truth is that Jews in Ukraine are a tiny sliver of the population. But they're a majority of the biggest oligarchs, like the Burisma oil company that was bribing the son of the president of the United States, the son of the vice president, the son of the current president of the United States, and himself. It looks like the evidence is pretty strong on that. Was Burisma, which was run by two Jews, or the two biggest stockholders were Burisma, were the Jewish Hoklio, I can't pronounce his name very well, but he's Jewish, and Kolomoisky. And so it's very fascinating to look at that, all these, you know, these connections that go on in this thing. So how do Jews view Ukraine? And you know what? They view Ukraine and the Cossacks, which are the founders of Ukraine, with as much hatred as they view the Cossacks of Belarusia, the Cossacks of Russia, and the Russians of those countries. Ukraine was actually part of the Kievan Rus, of course. Now, before I quote some amazing things by Foreign Policy, which is considered almost like the magazine of the CFR. It's what most of them write in. A lot of these are former officials. The CFR is the Council on Foreign Relations, which is, you know, the patron saint of this thing almost from its existence in terms of after the war, into the 1940s was Henry Kissinger almost to the present time. They still write about him with glowing terms. And Jewish, of course. And the foreign policy for the last few decades has been run by Jews almost exclusively. And they've been putting forth the Jewish policy and hatred toward Russia. But also the interesting stuff is it's easy to see just by their own publications how the Jewish elite and mainstream Jewish media for Jews, we're not talking about radical Jews somewhere, mainstream Jewish media has a burning hatred toward the Ukrainian people and the Cossacks in particular, which are the national symbol of Ukraine. And I'm going to give you an example of this first, and then I'm going to go to the foreign policy article proving this and showing the incredible reaction in foreign policy of the Jews taking over the land of the Cossacks, you know, but, you know, these people they hate. So first I'm going to quote from a publication called Jewish Learning, which is the biggest Jewish conglomerate of websites and everything and nonprofit groups for Jews and Jewish religion and Jewish people. It's called My Jewish Learner, one of the main websites in the world for this. And the article is entitled, this is under Jewish History, right? And the thing they show in the article, I'll just tell you the picture too, you should show this. They show a picture of some Cossacks, apparently, allegedly. This is a drawing, so it's not like a historical picture, but it's to make the most volatile, hateful position or an image of Cossacks possible. This is a painting, holding up the head of a Jew, right? They had wars, of course, with the Jewish Ashkenazis, you know, the Jewish trouble, you know, against the indigenous peoples of these countries when they came into Eastern Europe, of course, during the last 6-7 centuries. And anyway, so they show a Cossack holding up a Jewish head, right? And the headline reads, "Who were the Cossacks?" Quote, this is the subtitle, "These 17th century Ukrainian rebels perpetrated brutal programs against Jews." Quote, "Ukrainians view them as exemplars for their unique national spirit, heroic, nonconformist, and fiercely independent, defending Ukrainian national sovereignty from all enemies." Then it says, and I quote exactly, "But for Jews, Cossacks are symbols of fear and hatred. the perpetrators of centuries of brutal programs. I mean, the Cossack symbol, by the way, is like the symbol of Ukraine. It's also employed in every uniform in Ukraine. But how did Jews really feel about Ukrainians? Those 40,000 Jews shrank dramatically when the war started. And even Zelensky talked about this, and he met with Jews, and he helped them evacuate from the country while he was moving toward a civil war and a massive war. He actually helped them leave Ukraine. Well, today they even impress people, right? Now, another article before I go to the foreign policy article, which is so, again, this is Jewish material. This is Jewish publication. This is, you know, a very symbiotic relationship, this magazine, with the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the most important think tank, the most important organization in America that both publicizes neoconservative thought and foreign policy programs that Jews want. They have a very recent article called Promoting the Disintegration of Russia from Russia into 80 different nations, 80 different states, 80 different states that they can easily control with American military and with other military, and that they can, and the article literally suggests that we come in there, destroy, disintegrate Russia, and steal all their assets. All right, so I'm going to get this, and I'll be right finished in a second, Doctor, so please don't leave me here. So I want to show one other thing to give you, you know, the true idea of, you know, what's happening here. So I'm going to also quote to you from the Jerusalem Post. This is Jerusalem Post. This is a post right about the beginning of the Ukrainian war. And so the Jerusalem Post is the most prestigious English language, and they have a Hebrew version too, language paper in Israel. It's quoted all over the world. So this is the article, you know, Jerusalem Post, Russia-Ukraine war. This is the headline. Remember the good, bad of Ukrainian Jewish history, opinion. And it goes on to say, Ukrainian is home to a rich Jewish history, as well as a dark past of death, programs, persecution, and more. It's written by a Jewish historian by the name of Micah Halpern, published again March 6, 2022. You can check it out if you don't believe me, folks. And it just shows the hatred, that the vicious hatred that Jews have to the Ukrainian people and to the Russian people as well. So let me just quote from this article so you know I'm not making it up. By the way, it's been talked about a lot, Victoria Nuland's hatred for Russia, how she blames even her father's psychosis and abuse of her and her grandfather because of those damn Russians, right? And all these members of Congress, the whole Russiagate was about Schiff, it was about Nadler, it was about Rosencrantz, all these people. Rosenstein, that's right. And this is, so this is, again, from the leading, most powerful paper in Israel, to remind people how evil Ukrainians are. But of course, they don't mind using evil Ukrainians as cannon fodder, right? As a sacrifice, if they can kill a bunch of Russians. They're basically doing two things by this. They're killing their vital enemies, the Cossacks, and the Ukrainian people who are Russian. And most of them do have Russian genealogy, even if they don't directly recognize it. But they're also, you know, they're killing Russians, and they're advancing the Jewish global entities that want to control Russia, and they want to steal from Russia, just like the Jewish oligarchs did in the 1990s. So here's what he says, and he talks about this because obviously the Jewish power structure says, man, we got to support Ukraine against the, you know, because of the bigger tasks there. We got to destroy Russia, which is the most powerful nation on earth, which they consider to be anti-Semitic. He goes, it's blasphemy, I know, but I'm torn when it comes to the Ukraine. I am of two minds. He, by the way, still supports the Ukrainian war against Russia. He aids that war. He supports that war in every form he ever goes on. I'm in two minds, not about the atrocities Putin is committing. Every good person can conclude that Russia violated human rights and international law by invading Ukraine. Of course, these Ukrainian Jews that controlled the country in the Ukraine and the American Jews that got them to launch a war and shell and kill 13,000-14,000 Eastern Ukrainians. Oh God, that's not a problem. There was no motivation for Russia or Ukrainians to resist this Jewish government, right? That Russia is dead wrong via Ukraine, that case is open and shut. It's the historian in me, he says. This is the beginning of the article, too. So this is very important words. It's the historian in me that's conflicted. For the past 1,000 years, even longer, 1,000 years, Ukraine has been home to a robust and exciting Jewish history. And then he goes into the fact that Ukraine, right, has been, the Ukrainian Jews have been victimized by these evil Ukrainians for all these years, right? He talks about how Ukraine was, in terms of Jews, the Baal Shem Tov, which is one of the Hasidic organizers, and Hasidism is a very powerful movement that dominates a lot of Jewish politics and dominates the whole settlers in Israel, began as a Hasidic movement in Ukraine, where the great Hebrew writers wrote their journals and newspapers. And by the way, Hasidism is very anti-Gentile, extremely so, right? And it's probably the most radical, political, racist, anti-Gentile sect of Judaism, which equates Gentiles with animals. And it is the heart of the settler movement in Israel. So I give you that, Frank, because a lot of people are not going to know this. Ukraine, quote, was where Golda Meir was born in Kyiv. So they celebrate the Jewish parts of Ukraine, but they don't celebrate Ukraine, right? He says, but why am I of two minds? Because with good came the bad, because Ukraine was where Bogdan Chmielinski, the 17th century leader of the Cossack Rebellion, who fought against the Poles. He's the guy that's honored in Ukraine as like the father of the country, like George Washington, who fought against the Poles to recapture the lowlands, committed his dastardly deeds, because in that process, Chmielinski and his Ukrainian Cossacks murdered Jews and burned Jewish communities. These were the original programs. Chmielinski brought the programs. Chmielinski pronounced Chmielinski, so he gives us the proper pronunciation, I guess, has the distinction of being the first pogromist. Until the rise of Adolf Hitler, Chmielinski was the greatest murderer of Jews in all of Jewish history. So, boy, that's a lot of hate. If they say that until the rise of Hitler, the Ukrainians responsible for the biggest program. This is pure hate, folks, toward the Ukrainians. All right. Until the rise of Hitler, Chmielinski was the greatest murderer of Jews in all of Jewish history. So then he goes on to say, to show you the hatred he has. I mean, this, of course, happened hundreds of years ago. But this guy still harbors such hatred. He writes these things, which I will quote. And I'm sorry for taking so much time here, doctor, but I think it's really important so people get an understanding in this anecdote, the hatred they have toward the people of Ukraine and the people of Russia. I visited Ukraine many times, and each time I visit the capital city of Kyiv, I make a pilgrimage to the main city rotary roundabout. It's where many roads lead in a circle. Without the circle, there would be terrible traffic backups. In the middle of this beautifully groomed traffic circle is an imposing statue. A horse stands up on its hind legs. On the horse sits Bogdan Chmielinski. The plaque on the statue reads, Bogdan Chmielinski, the hero of the Ukrainian people. I visit the statue at great risk. Just crossing the street to get close to the statue is dangerous, and what I'm about to do is dangerous and against the law. I spit on Chmielinski, and I spit on his memory. Now, so I think I've illustrated how much Jews hate, and this is in a major paper, basically saying to Jews how terrible, saying to all the Jews of Israel, all the Jews of the world, how evil the damn Cossacks were. So here's the Foreign Policy magazine organization headline, Foreign Policy, How a Jew Won Over the Land of the Cossacks. Now notice this is similar, again, to the Council on Foreign Relations. But it's pointing out, they can't retrain themselves by pointing out how evil the Cossacks are. And they're kind of laughing at Ukraine because Ukraine now has a Jewish prime minister basically installed and a Jewish president installed by the Jewish neocons of America. Right? You can't make it up. Under threat from Russia, national identity in Ukraine has overpowered religious and ethnic differences. You know, and then they show Zelensky. He says, Ukraine, the way Moshe, this is how it starts. Kyiv, Ukraine. Moshe Reuven Azman, the chief rabbi of Kyiv, tells it a miracle occurred Sunday night. Or perhaps Azman says, smiling, it's merely a way that God wanted to laugh a bit. I'll laugh a little bit. God wanted to laugh. Yeah, it was Jews laughing, let me tell you. For centuries, and this is, again, the first part of the article, how evil Ukrainians are. For centuries, Jews were chased and slaughtered in what was now Ukraine by the Cossacks, the Nazis, and the Russians. During the Holocaust, more Jews were executed in 2 days at Rabbi Yar in Kyiv than in almost any other single Nazi massacre. And today, across Europe, anti-Semitism is on the rise. But on Sunday, Vladimir Zelensky, you know, who is Jewish, won Ukraine's presidential elections. Right? Amazing. He's also joined by Prime Minister Volodymyr Grossman, who is also Jewish. It means that Ukraine will be the first country besides Israel to have both a Jewish president and prime minister. So there you go. I don't know. I'm sorry to go into these details and do these quotations, Doctor, but I wanted to share it with you, share it with the audience, and get your commentary on it, because this is so revealing. So the way I feel about this is they allow Nazis, and some Nazis, and most of them are not Nazis, by the way. There are some people that identify with Nazis because the Nazis fought the communists that did the Holodomor. And I want people to note also, Doctor, and we got to remember when we read this, you see these articles about what happened to Jews by the Ukrainians. They don't say a word about the Jewish orchestrated Holocaust against Ukrainians, a massacre bigger than the Holocaust against Jews committed allegedly by the Germans, right, in the Second World War. They don't have a word about the fact that the whole Holodomor murder of 7 to 11 million Ukrainians was orchestrated by Kaganovich, who was the deputy premier of the Soviet Union, who was, before that, the head of the Communist Party in Ukraine, and this whole Holodomor was executed by Jews in Ukraine and Jews in Russia that led this thing, that they want to talk about atrocities. They're tiny atrocities in comparison by Ukrainians against Jews. This is an example of what's going on. So I don't think Jews are upset about all these hundreds. They want to win the war because they're fighting a global battle against Russia. But at the same time, they're not that upset, especially if these Avestal and radical, just basically Ukrainian patriots dying and being crushed and bled to death and killed and blown to bits in this war. I don't think they at all. I think that may be one of the motives. I believe that they don't care. Certainly the people in America and the Jews around the world don't care that Ukrainians are dying. And I don't think Zelensky even cares. If he cared, he would have made peace despite what the United States said at the first peace conferences. Go ahead, Doctor. I'm anxious, looking forward to your commentary. Go anywhere you want to in this aspect, please. Well, we'll go forward in the after the show's on to make sure that we get it back. If you can come back and join us, I know you've got to take business calls sometime, and I know that was a long aspect of historical information I wanted to add to this broadcast. So I'm sorry that took so long, and I'm sorry you had to go to another call. I understand that. Okay, so I'm going to complete this then, folks. So what we've got to see here, what's really going on in Ukraine, is a massive human rights crime against the Ukrainian people, against the Russian people, and against, actually, the European people and the American people. We're spending billions of dollars. We have the danger of getting America into this war. And the people that are going to be fighting and dying in this war are going to be primarily, if America gets involved, won't be Jews. They're always the most underrepresented groups in the military. It's going to be the Goyim. And the fact that this guy could go there. That's good. Did you hear all of it? I know you might have to take a call. Did you hear what I was talking
about? No. I just, my internet cut out. So okay. I didn't hear
it. Well, I'm glad you were back. I'm just going to give you a quick recap. So I put out an article in the Jerusalem Post, a major article by a major Jewish historian, that he goes to makes a special pilgrimage to reclaim Ukraine, how much he hates them, and how he goes to the statue of Klimitsky. I also quoted Foreign Policy magazine, where the only thing they can talk about is, you know, the Ukrainian massacres of them. I quoted from my Jewish learning about how the Cossacks were the biggest killers of Jews, only exceeded by Adolf Hitler. And then I quoted the article in the Foreign Policy magazine, how the massacre at Baba Yar, the biggest single massacre, there's the biggest single massacre you know, of Jews during the Second World War, the single massacre, which exceeded anything the Nazis did. And they didn't even mention 1 second about the Jewish orchestration of the whole Holodomor, which gets 1,000th of the coverage. Even more people died in that, Christians died in that, which was orchestrated by Jews, than the Holocaust gets. So I don't mind repeating that, because I want this to be burned into the history and the mind and the consciousness of all people listening. But go ahead and get your, I want to get your reaction to some of this. I don't think the Ukrainians
who, well, here's my reaction.
Ukrainians, yeah.
Here's my reaction. So in February of last year, this war started, and it became the new thing. So there's tens of millions, well, probably many millions of Americans who just are all in for the new thing, whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's you know, the Corona apocalypse, whatever it is, they're in for it. And so everybody changed their, and these are going up for the most part. They changed their Facebook profiles to the Ukrainian flag, and you know, they're all rooting, they're all pulling for Ukraine, and they have no idea what this is about. The American people are just so much in the dark about everything, and it's sad. So we're doing our best to try to.
I know this is almost repetitive, but why are they so much in the dark? What's the reason that there are so much of it? Could it have something
because
to do with
the
Jewish domination
media,
of the media and politics and political
the Jewish
money?
Media, the Jewish politics, the Jewish academia. Yeah, the Jews are keeping the goyim in the dark. And, you know, for 50-something years, I guess you've been the goyim whisperer, right? there's a dog whisperer. You've been the goyim whisperer.
Yeah, I'm trying to whisper to the goyim horses.
I think you might, maybe you just need to start being the goyim shouter.
The goyim donkey whisperer, because remember when the chief rabbi of Israel and Jewish orthodoxy all over the world, Rabbi Yosef, said that he wants his Gentile slaves to have a long life so they can serve his Jewish masters like a donkey, just like he wants his donkey to live. So maybe I'm the donkey, the goyim donkey whisperer, the donkeys that carry the burdens and spill their blood and give their work and effort for Jews rather than their own selves and their own interests. Doctor, I don't want to lose you again. Well, we had problems with the internet connections. I know he's, you know, out of town on business, but yeah, sometimes the internet connections are so good. So I'm going to close real quickly in this show. If Dr. Slattery can come back, it's fine. But we only have a couple minutes anyway. I want to re-quote from you to what I'm talking about in terms of Jewish supremacy.
Yeah.
Which, oh, okay, doctor, I'm back. You lost connection again.
So,
yeah,
bunker.
You're breaking up too. Yeah, you're breaking up. Well,
yeah.
Look, we love you, and I'm sorry about this. I'm going to go ahead and close.
That so we sucks.
Got, oh, I got
well,
2 minutes.
I'm
so sorry. I wanted your comments on this too. Okay, I'm going to quote to give in. It's what we're talking about. The reason why you don't know any of this stuff, the reason why you don't know the crime America's committing, and committed in Ukraine, that the butcher of Ukraine, Zelensky's committing against the Russian people who actually came in and they're sacrificing themselves to help Russians and Ukrainians from a Jewish dictatorship, which is murdering their country, destroying their country, is because there's Jewish supremacy. And the state of Israel is a Jewish supremacist state. And Jewish supremacy in America, in media and government, campaign financing, and they're organized, folks. This is not like just a bunch of individual Jews everywhere. They're everywhere. They have organizations like organizations they control, like the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, which is a Jewish head, a soon-to-be new Jewish head, and the head before that was who was Jewish, and the patron saint is Henry Kissinger, another Jewish Zionist. So here's the editorial in the Haaretz newspaper, which is the oldest daily in Israel. This is a fact. Everybody in Israel knows this. Editorial, an oath of loyalty to Jewish supremacy. Quote, and they show a picture of these Kahanists. This is the Meir Kahani, who actually celebrated the Jewish Goldstein, Dr. Goldstein, went to a mosque and killed 39 Muslims at prayer in Jerusalem, right? And they have marches to this, right? And they said the process of turning the state of Israel from a democracy that's suffering under the burden of the occupation to an occupation suffering the burden of a democracy is advancing along several paths. It goes on to say that the truth is that Israel has become a Jewish ethnocracy. You ever heard of the white ethnostate promoted by, you know, so many people, Spencer, for instance, and many others? Well, they have that in Israel. They have a real ethnostate. They have a racist ethnostate. And the interesting thing is this publication admits that the government of Israel is now populated and controlled by, quote, racist, nationalistic, messianic, anti-democratic coalitions. And every Jew in Israel knows this, whether they're for it or maybe opposed to it. But again, they have enough Jews and the bulk of the people so they can get away with this, right, in Israel. And every Jew in America knows this. But are we sanctioning Israel? And the interesting thing, again, is we talked to Dr. Slatter and I, we used to talk about the fact that whenever a Jew does something good, he's identified as a Jew. Einstein's a Jew, right? Or some Elie Wiesel, peacemaker, whatever, is a Jew. He's not a peacemaker, actually, a war maker. And every time a Jewish Israeli, and Jews don't identify themselves as Israelis, but as Jews, it's a Jewish state. But they never talk about Israeli attacks as Jewish attacks. But the paper in Israel does. But we can't, as Gentiles, do it in our papers in America. Quote, Israel's army chief is complicit in Jewish terror. The settler judge who advocates lenient treatment for Jewish terror. Intel community speaking of the light of terrorism against the Jewish terrorism against Palestinians. I'm out of time, but I love you. I've got about 20 seconds left. Please support our movement. Go to Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana. Please support our work. Whatever. Go to davidduke.com. Go to my gab at Real David Duke, and I will see you tomorrow with the great Mark Collett of Great Britain, the once Great Britain. Bye-bye now.
RSA in test after test.